Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Bacon Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Today, we continue with our annual tradition of listening to Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie, and then talking to Stacy Pearl about Thanksgiving dinner. Arlo Guthrie is the son of the great singer-songwriter Woody Guthrie. He started performing when he was a teenager, and he wrote and recorded Alice's Restaurant in 1967. It was based on a true story that began on Thanksgiving Day 2 years earlier, when Arlo Guthrie was 18. The song premiered at the Newport Folk Festival, and it became a major hit, and Arlo Guthrie went on to star in a film by the same name in 1969. Let's listen to Alice's Restaurant.
This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant is not the name of the restaurant. That's just the name of the song. And that's why I call the song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Now it all started 2 Thanksgivings ago. It was on 2 years ago on Thanksgiving when my friend and I went up to visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice doesn't live in the restaurant. She lives in the church nearby the restaurant in the bell tower with her husband Ray and Fatsha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they got a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. And having all that room, seeing as how they took out all the pews, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, we found all the garbage in there, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the city dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the city dump. Well, we got there, and there's a big sign and a chain across the dump saying closed on Thanksgiving. And we had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before, and with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we came to a side road, and off the side of the side road was another 15-foot cliff, and at the bottom of the cliff was another pile of garbage. And we decided that one big pile's better than 2 little piles, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning when we got a phone call from Officer Obi. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage, and wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obi, cannot tell a lie. I put that envelope under that garbage." After speaking to Obi for about 45 minutes on the telephone, we finally arrived at the truth of the matter and said that we had to go down and pick up the garbage, and also had to go down and speak to him at the police officer station. So we got in the red VW microbus with the shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, headed on toward the police officer station. Now, friends, there was only one or two things that Obi could have done at the police station, and the first was that he could have given us a medal for being so brave and honest on the telephone, which wasn't very likely, and we didn't expect it. Another thing was that he could have bawled us out and told us never to be seen driving garbage around the vicinity again, which is what we expected. But when we got to the police officer station, there was a third possibility that we hadn't even counted upon, and we was both immediately arrested, handcuffed. And I said, Obie, I don't think I can pick up the garbage with these handcuffs on. He said, shut up, kid. Get in the back of the patrol car, and that's what we did. Sat in the back of the patrol car and drove to the, quote, scene of the crime, unquote. I want to tell you about the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts, where this happened. Here they got three stop signs, two police officers and one police car. But when we got to the scene of the crime, there was five police officers and three police cars, being the biggest crime of the last 50 years, and everybody wanted to get in the newspaper story about it. And they was using up all kinds of cop equipment that they had hanging around the police officer station. They was taking plaster, tire track, footprints, dog smelling prints, and they took 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. Took pictures of the approach, the getaway, the northwest corner, the southwest corner, and that's not to mention the aerial photography. After the ordeal, we went back to the jail. Obie said he was gonna put us in the cell. Said, kid, I'm gonna put you in the cell. I want your wallet and your belt. And I said, Obie, I can understand you wanting my wallet, so I don't have any money to spend in the cell, but what do you want my belt for? And it said, kid, we don't want any hangings. Said, Obie, did you think I was gonna hang myself for littering? Obie said he was making sure, and friends Obie was, cause he took out the toilet seat so I couldn't hit myself over the head and drown. And he took out the toilet paper so I couldn't bend the bars, roll the toilet paper out the window, slide down the roll and have an escape. Obie was making sure, and it was about 4 or 5 hours later that Alice, remember Alice? It's a song about Alice. Alice came by and with a few nasty words to Obie on the side, bailed us out of jail. We went back to the church, had another Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat, and didn't get up until the next morning when we all had to go to court. We walked in, sat down. Obie came in with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back each one. Sat down. Man came in, said, all rise. We all stood up, and Obie stood up with the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures, and the judge walked in, sat down with the C&I dog, and he sat down. We sat down. Obie looked at the C&I dog. And then the 27 8x10 covered glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and looked at the C&I dog. And then at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one, and began to cry, cause Obie came to the realization that it was a typical case of American blind justice and there wasn't nothing he could do about it. And the judge wasn't gonna look at the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one explaining what each one was to be used as evidence against us. And we was fined $50 and had to pick up the garbage in the snow, but that's not what I came to tell you about. Came to talk about the draft. You got a building down New York City, it's called Whitehall Street, where you walk in and you get injected, inspected, detected, infected, neglected, and selected. I went down to get my physical examination one day, and I walked in, I sat down, got good and drunk the night before, so I looked and felt my best when I went in that morning. Cause I wanted to look like the all-American kid from New York City. Man, I wanted to feel like the, I wanted to be the all-American kid from New York, and I walked in, sat down, I was hung down, brung down, hung up, and all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things. And I walked in, I sat down, they gave me a piece of paper, said, kid, see the psychiatrist, room 604. And I went up there, I said, shrink, I want to kill. And I want to kill. Kill. I want to see blood and gore and guts and veins in my teeth. Eat dead, burnt bodies. I mean, kill. Kill!
kill, kill. And I started jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill. And it started jumping up and down with me, and we was both jumping up and down, yelling, kill, kill. And the sergeant came over, pinned the medal on me, sent me down the hall, said, you're our boy. Didn't feel too good about it. Proceeded on down the hall, getting more injections, inspections, detections, neglections, and all kinds of stuff that they was doing to me at the thing there. And I was there for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. I was there for a long time, going through all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly things, and I was just having a tough time there. And they was inspecting, injecting every single part of me, and they was leaving no part untouched. Proceeded through, and I when finally came to see the very last man, I walked in, sat down after a whole big thing there, and I walked up and said, what do you want? He said, kid, we only got one question. Have you ever been arrested? And I proceeded to tell him the story of Alice's restaurant, Massacre, with full orchestration and five-part harmony and stuff like that, and then all the phenomena stopped me right there and said, kid, did you ever go to court? I proceeded to tell him the story of the 27 8x10 colored glossy pictures with the circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. It stopped me right there and said, kid, I want you to go over and sit down on that bench that says Group W. Now, kid! And I walked over to the bench there, and there's Group W is where they put you. If you may not be moral enough to join the army after committing your special crime, and there was all kinds of mean, nasty, ugly-looking people on the bench there. Mother rapers. Father stabbers. Father rapers. Father rapers sitting right there on the bench next to me, and one, it was mean and nasty and ugly and horrible and crime-fighting guys are sitting there on the bench, and the meanest, ugliest, nastiest one, the meanest father raper of them all, was coming over to me, and he was mean and ugly and nasty and horrible and all kinds of things, and he sat down next to me and said, kid, what'd you get? Said, I didn't get nothing. I had to pay $50 and pick up the garbage. I said, what were you arrested for, kid? And I said, littering. And they all moved away from me on the bench there, the hairy eyeball, and all kinds of mean, nasty things, till I said, and creating a nuisance. And they all came back, shook my hand, and we had a great time on the bench talking about crime, mother stabbing, father raping, all kinds of groovy things that we was talking about on the bench. And everything was fine, we were smoking cigarettes and all kinds of things, until the sergeant came over, had some paper in his hand, held it up and said, kids, this piece of paper's got 47 words, 37 cents, it's 58 words. We want no details of the crime, time, crime, and that kind of thing. Got slapped and turned about the crime. Want to know the rest of the officer's name, and that kind of thing. You got to say, and talk for 45 minutes, and nobody understood a word that he said. But we had fun filling out the forms and playing with the pencils on the bench there. And I filled out the Massacre with the four-part harmony, and wrote it down there just like it was, and everything was fine, and I put down a pencil and I turned over the piece of paper, and there on the other side, in the middle of the other side, away from everything else on the other side, in parentheses, capital letters, quotated, read the following words. Kid, you rehabilitated yourself. I went over to the sergeant and said, sergeant, you've got a lot of damn gall to ask me if I've rehabilitated myself. I'm sitting here on the bench. I'm sitting here on the Group W bench,
'Cause you wanna know if I'm moral enough to join an army, burn women, kids, houses, and villages after being a litter bug. You must admit, said kid, you don't like your kind. And we're gonna send your fingerprints off to Washington, and friends, somewhere in Washington, enshrined in some little folders, a study in black and white of my fingerprints. And the only reason I'm singing you the song now is 'cause you may know somebody in a similar situation. Or you may be in a similar situation, and if you're in a situation like that, there's only one thing you can do, is walk into the shrink wherever you are. Just walk in, say, shrink. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant and walk out. You know, if one person, just one person does it, they may think he's really sick and they won't take him. And if two people do it in harmony, they think they're both faggots and it won't take either of them. And if three people do it, can you imagine three people walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out? They may think it's an organization. And can you imagine 50 people a day? I said 50 people a day walking in, singing a bar, Alice's restaurant, and walking out. And friends, they may think it's a movement. And that's what it is. The Alice's Restaurant Anti-Massacre Movement. And all you gotta do to join is to sing it the next time it comes around on the guitar with feeling. So we'll wait till it comes around on the guitar here. Sing it when it does. Here it comes. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. That was horrible. Want to end war and stuff, you gotta sing loud. You could put a lot. I've been singing the song now for 25 minutes. I could sing it for another 25 minutes. I'm not proud or tired. So we'll wait till it comes around again, and this time with four part harmony in the feeling. We're just waiting for it to come around is what we're doing. All right now. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant, excepting Alice. You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. So walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant. Da 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 da. At Alice's restaurant.
We've just heard Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie, recorded in 1967, based on a true incident in 1965 on Thanksgiving Day. The Alice in the song was Alice Brock, who actually lived in a deconsecrated church in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and invited people over for Thanksgiving dinner. Arlo Guthrie actually bought the church in 1991 and converted it into the Guthrie Center, which is a non-denominational church and cultural center, and people can still go there for Thanksgiving dinner. Officer Obie's chair sits in the chapel. Officer Obie was William Obenhein, who was the chief of police in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. He died in 1994. When the song was made into a film in 1969 called Alice's Restaurant, Officer Obie played himself. During the course of his life, he actually also posed for a number of Norman Rockwell pictures. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all for Alice's Restaurant for now. We'll hear it again next year at this time. We're going to take a break, and Stacey Pearl will be with us talking about Thanksgiving dinner in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned. I am very happy now to welcome back to the show Stacey Pearl. She is executive chef with Walter Burke Catering, and she is here with us once a year at the very least, speaking about Thanksgiving. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanksgiving. What's new since the last time we talked about how to make Thanksgiving dinner?
I think what's new is there's now a whole bunch more ways acceptable to cook a turkey. Vegetarian cuisine has definitely improved over the past few years, and they don't have to suffer as bad as they used to.
And we make them suffer. Even.
We do. We do. But, you know, that soy-based bacon sure is yummy.
Is it? No.
Actually, in a vegetarian stuffing, it's pretty darn good, I must say. It is. Trust me, really.
Okay.
And I think more people are learning that turkey is good because most people learn to cook turkey from their parents who overcooked it, and it was horrible. And people, when they hear turkey, they think dry, crumbly, just the most horrible thing in the world, because people, especially older folks who were very, very scared of poisoning people, would cook things a good half an hour to 45 minutes past when the little thing popped out.
Right, right.
And I think people are just more aware now.
They're pasteurizing it.
Oh, it was terrible. And I understand why people hate turkey, but I come from a family that made great turkey, and we've always loved it, and it's a really great healthy choice. And I think more people are getting turned on to turkey. I think that's a plus.
When it's tender and moist and has good flavor, you're off to the races.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, in these economical times, it's a great choice. It's low fat. You could do all kinds. You know, people think, oh, I'll get a 20-pound turkey. I'll be eating it for the rest of my life. This isn't true anymore. And there's so many great things to do with turkey. And people are just getting
more
creative.
Yeah, you're just eating it till Christmas.
Yeah, sometimes. But I mean, you know, between your stroganoffs and your stews and your turkey stir fries, there's so many things you can do with it. It's a great thing. Make a big one and, you know, do all kinds of fun stuff with it.
Okay, so first things first. How do you cook it so that it's tender and moist?
First thing is you've got to start with a good turkey. Like anything else. You know, the old-fashioned way of going to the supermarket and buying the butterball with the 84-pound breasts on it, where it's been infused with we don't really know what.
Right.
Don't do it. There's no reason. Cross the boards now. You could get really high-quality turkeys. You could get these distal organic birds. You could get an Amish bird. You can get all-natural birds at all the supermarkets now. And they're absolutely delicious. So the first thing you do is spend...
And they don't cost you $49.99
They won't, because it's become mainstream now. Yeah. I mean, you could still buy your special ordered heirloom bird, which will cost you $300-$400. You can do that. But there's no need. Generally speaking, the quality of turkeys available in the supermarkets right now is excellent. So buy a good bird and buy it in enough time that you could defrost it properly, which means defrost it in your refrigerator for 2 to 3 days.
So buy it 4 or 5 days ago.
Exactly. If you haven't already, you're in a little bit of trouble, but basically, that's what the way you want to do it. You want to have it in your fridge, you want it defrosted properly, and then you want to cook it in a nice herb rub of your choosing. This year, I'm doing sage and balsamic. You could go a little bit southwestern and put a little chipotle on it. Rub some herbs into the skin. Put it in a pan. Put some water in the bottom, because that's the base of your gravy, and stick it in the oven. This is not rocket science.
Right.
It's very easy.
Now, I want to just give one little anecdote. Somebody I knew who had moved to New Mexico, where there was sagebrush everywhere, took some of the sagebrush off the plant and put it on their turkey, and it was evil and nasty.
Yes.
Don't do that, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Don't do that. Don't do that. But there are a lot of, I use rosemary for my garden. And pretty much you can't go wrong, but you want to put some salt and some pepper and a little garlic on the skin. Some people eat skin, some people don't, but those flavors. And here's a tip. If you don't eat the skin, take some of those.
Give it to me.
Send it to Mary Charlotte. You can take those same herbs and you could rub them under the skin. This way, you want to cook it with the skin on, even if you're fat conscious or whatever, because that keeps the moisture in. So cook it like that, and then if the herbs are underneath the skin, then you could throw the skin away or give it to your dogs who love turkey skin.
Yeah, they won't get thinner by your doing that.
No, but it's good. It's Thanksgiving. Dogs need to celebrate.
Now, I still stand by my tried and true method of draping organic bacon over the
turkey.
Yes,
but we know you do that with everything.
Not necessarily.
You know, bacon is a great idea. You know, and some people will use that flavor. I mean, a little pork fat, a little chicken fat, you know, all those kind of things. The highly bred turkeys are bred very low fat. The more organic you go, you're going to get more natural fat. You're going to get more moisture. You're going to get more juice.
So that's where having a good turkey to start with gives you more flavor and more moisture.
Absolutely. A much moister product. However, remembering that the yield on an organic turkey is much smaller because they don't, you know, shoot the breasts up with water and salt and whatever else they do.
So we have this thing in the oven. Do you start at a higher temperature and turn it down?
I do sometimes. It depends on, I cook a lot of turkeys at once. So it depends on what I've got in my oven. The reason people do that is to get the skin crusty. If you want to do that, you can do that. Leave it uncovered. Turn your oven up to 450. Get a nice, crisp skin. Then you'll have to tent it with tinfoil so it doesn't get overcooked and turn it down. There's many ways. And honestly, you know, some people cook them in bags. I don't really find that it matters. The important thing is not to overcook it. That's the basic problem that everybody does.
So how do you not overcook it? Do you use a meat thermometer?
Absolutely. There is, you know, there's all kinds of formulas, and I went online, and I was trying to see if I could come. And they vary between 12 minutes a pound, 15 minutes a pound, 18 minutes a pound. You can't really go by that. It depends on your oven. It depends on how much other stuff is in the oven. A thermometer cannot be beat, an accurate thermometer. And, you know, you could always test your thermometer. Put it in ice water. Put it in boiling water. See what it reads. Yeah. They have a little adjustment underneath with a pair of pin-nose pliers. You could fix it. You drop your thermometer on the floor four or five times, chances are it's not going to be accurate. And everybody does it, you know. 165, that's what you're going for.
Okay.
Now, when you take it out...
No, wait, yes, where in the body do you have
you
to stick it?
You want to go in more than one location, and you want to go in the thickest part. So you want to go in the thickest part of the breast. You want to go in the thigh. You don't want to go in the wing.
Right.
You want to go where the meat is dense and thick. Go in where the white meat is and the dark meat is and take a consensus. And remember that it will continue cooking when it comes out of the oven. So I pull it out at 158, something like that, and then it will go up to 165.
Oh, you pull it out?
Yes.
Now, this is something I never knew in all the years that we've been doing this show. You pull it out before it hits 165.
I do, because it continues.
It continues.
Yes.
And you verify that by standing over it with a meat thermometer.
Absolutely. I check it in so many different places, just to be absolutely sure. Because also, I mean, I'm cooking a variety of weights of turkey at the same time, so each one needs to be very carefully checked to make sure that we're all good.
Now, stuffing.
Stuffing.
That's my
favorite. Is this the in the bird, out of the bird conversation?
Well, this is the ingredients. I do both because I always make too much of it and then think, oh, dear, what am I going to do with the rest? And then cook it on the side. But it's easy to make really good stuffing, and there's a lot of ways to do it.
It is, and I think that's another place that people have started to realize you can get really creative. Incidentally, I don't know if you read in the New York Times recently, they found a secret copy of Marilyn Monroe's stuffing recipe.
Lay it on us.
Who apparently was a fantastic cook. And she, interestingly enough, specifies no garlic. And she uses sourdough bread.
And what else?
And she uses ground beef. She uses turkey, livers, or hearts. Celery, onion, chopped hard-boiled egg.
Good heavens.
Raisins, Parmesan cheese, walnuts, rosemary, oregano, thyme, bay leaf, poultry seasoning, kosher salt, and pepper.
Wow.
So... the thing is that
sounds positively voluptuous.
I'm sure it is. And I'm sure that when she presented it, it was just drop-dead gorgeous. But the thing about stuffing is don't just go to the store and get the Pepperidge Farm mix.
No, do not.
There are so many great breads you could use. I read a recipe recently where they used challah, which is, you know, that very eggy brioche bread chopped in cubes. Cornbread. Around here, we all have cornbread. Stale cornbread, great for stuffing. Bake some ahead of time, let it get hard, cut it in cubes.
Rice. Wild rice.
Wild rice makes a great stuffing. If you want to do your hippie stuffing, you could use quinoa.
Right.
The thing is you want something that's absorbent because if you cook it in the bird, obviously it'll absorb the juices from the bird. Or if you cook it on the side, I always make homemade turkey stock because I have to make a lot of gravy, and I'll put my turkey stock on it. You want something that's going to absorb. And I really think a fruit and a nut in there is a great idea.
Absolutely.
You know.
Now, those dried fruits that have been sitting around since last year.
Exactly. Dried cranberries are like little pebbles. Put them in.
Yeah. They cook right up.
Yep. And they absorb. Yep.
And I have found also that, although I'm not the world's greatest cook, with stuffing, you pretty much can't go wrong by putting in some brandy.
Yes.
Or something else from your after-dinner liqueur cabinet.
Yes. And butter.
Butter.
Because you can't have too much fat in stuffing. I mean, it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's not the place you want to skimp. And stuffing is delicious. You know, sometimes we take the leftover stuffing and form it in patties and sauté it and have it with breakfast the next morning.
How wonderful.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Without maple syrup.
Yes, exactly. maple syrup. Bacon.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl about Thanksgiving dinner. So, if you want it, and also I've found that there are some people who don't like giblets, so I make the inside the turkey stuffing with the giblets and then the outside.
Oh, I think that's a great idea.
Vegetarian.
Right, right. Because the fact of the matter is that there are a huge amount of vegetarians, and we need to think of them. And it's very easy to make vegetarian stuffing, and it's a delicious part of the meal.
Yeah.
You know, you can use vegetable stock instead of your turkey stock and have the exact same items, and so nobody feels left out.
And even vegetarians drink brandy.
Yes, most they do, most of them, except for the really serious ones.
Somebody the other day was talking about how they were an ovo-lacto-bacotarian.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't even know
where to start.
Yeah. But let's go on. Cranberry sauce. We have already determined, unless something has changed, that buying the frozen cranberries and using the recipe on the package is all you need to know.
That's the classic. It's hard to beat it. I do, however, have Nina Stanberg from NPR goes on the air every year and reads Mama Stanberg's Cranberry Relish, which she is famous for, which is a very interesting recipe which I have not tried yet and I'm going to be trying soon, which uses whole cranberries, onion, sour cream, sugar, horseradish, ground all together, and it comes out Pepto-Bismol pink.
That's so nasty.
And she suggests that you freeze it and then take it out Thanksgiving morning because she likes it with little frozen icy slivers in it. I have to try it. When somebody has a recipe like that, when somebody combines two ingredients I never thought of, I immediately have to try it. The other day...
I'm speechless.
Isn't that crazy?
It sounds
but we're
so going to
do it. I'll get you some.
Okay.
The other day, I did a segment on cranberries on my show, and there was a recipe for baked cranberries, oven-roasted cranberries, which consisted of putting cranberries in a hotel pan, covering them with sugar, putting tinfoil on top, baking them in the oven for an hour, opening them up, letting the extra liquid drain from them, sprinkling them with brandy and another half cup of sugar, and then letting them air dry, and they become like little crystal jewels.
Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the podcast and write down what she just said. It sounds so good.
They're delicious, and I served them the other night as an hors d'oeuvre with crackers and blue cheese. So cranberries are really, really versatile, and I always like to point out that they freeze so well. Use them all year round.
Yeah.
They're not just for Thanksgiving.
But that's the best time you can get them.
Yes, you can get them now and just pop them in your freezer.
So we have now made the turkey and the stuffing and the cranberry sauce, but we need something, just a kind of token green of some
kind. I'm pushing for Brussels sprouts.
Oh, okay. I was going to push for green beans.
You know, you have your green bean mushroom soup thingy, and there are those people that are very attached to it with the canned onions. Personally, it's not part of my tradition, and I think it's kind of gross, but I know people like it. And you know, it's funny. Even people with the most sophisticated food taste, if they grew up eating it, they just revert
they
right
it.
To that. It's like you have to have that with the meal.
Yep.
But I don't do that. But I think green beans are great. I love green beans.
And you can sauté them so that they get nice,
so it could be
oily,
a totally
last-minute
thing. You know, it's one of those things where everything else is in the oven. You need to do, you know, and everyone worries about oven space. So it's nice to have something you could do on the stovetop if you don't have space in your oven. And that's the perfect thing. Green beans, sugar snap peas, which now all of a sudden are year-round. Used to be they had a three-week season. I'm not sure where they're getting them and what they're doing, but they're really good. You could do those.
Now, how do you do your Brussels sprouts?
I roast them. I take them and I mix them. I put a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper, and I put them in the oven and I roast them. And right before they're done, and I like them because they get a little crisp, like the loose leaves that fall off get a little crispy, really good. And then I put a little balsamic on them, and I drizzle them with a little either honey or a little sugar right at the end, because sometimes there's a hint of bitterness, and just a sprinkle takes that away. A friend of mine does them with blue cheese and walnuts, which I think is fabulous, but I know blue cheese is not everyone's taste, and I don't think it goes with Thanksgiving. But I think they're an absolutely delicious vegetable. Another thing you could do is you could do a green vegetable puree. You could do a cannelloni bean and broccoli puree, which I did on my show on Saturday, which is delicious. Or you could do a cauliflower broccoli potato puree. So you have options, you know what I mean? And try and think stovetop.
Yeah.
You know, because as I said, space is one of the things that stresses people out the most at Thanksgiving. How am I going to do everything at once? And that's why I always say Thanksgiving is a great meal because you can do a lot of stuff ahead.
How do you do your sweet potatoes? I mean, there's any number of different ways.
Once again, I'm really fond of roasting them, cubing them and roasting them. A little maple, a little orange on them. Sometimes I buy tangerine juice, which you can get, and I boil it down until it's a syrup. And then right before they come out, I just toss them with some tangerine concentrate. It's absolutely delicious. There's nothing to it. I mean, you could whip them up, but then you're going to butter and heavy cream, and you could go that route. But I feel like if you're going to do like a stuffing and maybe a mashed potato, you might want to keep the sweet potatoes a little lighter.
Well, and this is the thing. The way we're talking, I mean, you can make Thanksgiving dinner as light or as heavy as you want.
You can. You can. I mean, as I said, I wouldn't mess with the stuffing. Stuffing is big and heavy and fatty, and it's delicious. Don't do a thing to it. But you could do stuff with your vegetables. And you could also, we've talked about this before, it's not real traditional, but you can add a salad. You know, I really like, we do a fennel slaw that I really like, with great flavors. A simple coleslaw is always nice. Green salad, not so much, but I like to have a cold, shreddy thing with
my
dinner.
And, you know, fennel really helps you digest your food.
It does. It's such a great flavor. And sometimes I hit it with a shot of Pernod, which is, you know, liquor, nice. Which I know is right up your alley. So.
Okay, so you have all these different things in the oven. You've got your turkey, maybe you've got your sweet potatoes, maybe you've got some other potatoes. You've got all sorts of things, not to mention the apple pies and stuff that we're going to talk about in a few minutes. Do you recommend, I mean, maybe you do it all in your head now, but for the amateur Thanksgiving cooker who wants to do it right, do you have like a estimated time of dinner and then count backwards and decide when you're going to put stuff in?
I am nothing without a list. I make a list every day of what I'm going to do. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because with timing. So
yes.
10 a.m., put in the turkey.
Absolutely. Because I have one oven at home.
Right.
And, you know, so right, you work backwards. Okay, I want the turkey to be the last thing out of the oven. But I will par cook it and then finish it the last half hour in the oven.
You'll par cook it?
I will get it.
Take it out?
I will get it almost done and I'll take it out. I'll make sure my vegetables and all are good and then I'll put it back in and finish it.
Really?
Yes.
That doesn't mess it up?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I take it and I put it in the garage, which is cold, which is like my walk-in. So it gets chilled, so it's not sitting. And I do not stuff the bird, so I don't have a contamination issue. And I just chill it down a little bit. And you could do that the day ahead of time.
Right. As long as you don't have any dogs.
Right. No, dogs would be bad. And then I finish it. You know, certain things you want to do at the last minute. You know, you get your cranberry sauce, you get your salads. If you're going to do green beans, you get them prepped and ready to go. They're sitting next to the stove in a bowl. They take 5 minutes. They're the last things you do. You know, the potatoes take a while to warm. Get those in the oven. You want your potatoes nice and hot. You want your stuffing nice and hot. It's dense. Yeah, and you work backwards. And then, you know, worst case scenario, if your turkey's not hot enough, you heat your gravy, you slice it, you put it in the gravy, and you pop it in the oven for a second at the end, and it gets really hot.
Now, let's talk about both gravy and basting. Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about
turkey
basting.
I'm a fan of both. I baste. The thing is that once you baste, you lose the crispness of the skin. However, the flavors get into the turkey better, and it keeps it moist. And I just have, I find the cheapest rubber, one year I thought I'd get fancy, and I bought a stainless steel baster. They get hot.
Ah.
Not a good plan.
Very bad.
The cheapest plastic baster, and I baste every 30 minutes. And I make sure, and at this altitude, it's a problem because your liquid will evaporate much faster than you would have thought. And I always keep adding water to it because that is, and I have the drippings in there, and that is the basis of my gravy. And when the turkey is done, I lift the turkey out. I usually put it on a rack. I let that cool. I take the pan. I take some Madeira. I put it on the stove. I get it real hot, and I take a whisk, and I start scraping it around, and all the good little bits come off into the gravy, and that's the base for my gravy.
And those little bits are so good.
It's all about the bits. You know, that's what you want. And without that, you can't make gravy.
And also, some of the stuff from the turkey stuffing has fallen out into the...
In your case, yes, it has. No, I meant I'd stuff separately, so...
Yeah. Well, also, one thing I do to try to... when you have to close the cavity into which you've stuffed the stuffing, I actually use a large safety pin.
Oh, that's a great idea. You know what else is really good for sewing up turkeys? Dental floss.
Ah.
Not the minted kind.
No.
But if you don't have kitchen string, I read that once, and I've used it for years because it ties really well. Yeah. I kind of crisscross the legs, and I just tie it up, and it's really good.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
We're talking to Stacy Pearl about Thanksgiving dinner. Dessert.
The best part.
Have we done the meal?
Yeah, I think we're done with the meal.
Okay.
And now the 36 desserts come out. Now, this is where, if you're challenged by this meal, this is where your friends come in. What should I bring? Dessert. Either they can make it themselves, they could go to a cookbook, try any recipe, they can go to the website, whatever. Don't feel stressed if you don't do dessert. Just buy it. And the more desserts, the better. And you have your traditional desserts. Like, I personally think, you know, you have your pumpkin pie, you have your pecan pie. Those are your two most traditional, cranberry something. But you might need something chocolate. You know, and there's a lot of things you can do. There's some, if you don't bake, you know, Chocolate mousse. Nobody has ever turned down chocolate mousse. Very easy to do. Do it ahead of time. Put it in a beautiful dish. Get some whipped cream. Done. So it could be very simple. The other thing I think you should not overlook is it's always nice after a big meal to have some lovely fresh fruit. You know, a bowl of delicious grapes. Some clementine oranges are in season right now. They're great after a heavy meal. And sometimes you want to finish the meal and have fresh fruit, and then an hour later get to your baked goods, which I think works really well.
You can also do something very simple on the stove. In Deborah Madison's seasonal desserts? Her recent
fruit
cookbook.
Fruit desserts.
Yeah. There's a recipe for pears, and you just cook them in a pan on the stove with butter, and they caramelize. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. I think there's
brown
something,
sugar.
Some brown sugar, some sweet thing in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes about 5 minutes, and they're so good.
Yeah, something like that, and, you know, a little vanilla ice cream or something. You know, it doesn't have to be fancy. You need to have a sweet. And it's, you know, it's what people like. It's what they look forward to.
You mentioned at the beginning that Thanksgiving dinner has become better for vegetarians. What are some vegetarian choices?
Well, you know, I was just reading a recipe for a fennel and mushroom casserole, which I thought was a wonderful choice, made with whole wheat bread, like a crusty whole wheat baguette chopped up. So you have, it's not just, I think what offends vegetarians is they just get side dishes. But this was an entree. And I think you owe it to your vegetarians to do that. I'm not a big fan of the faux turkey. There are plenty of recipes out there for a seitan brewer's yeast based turkey thing that you can do. And I actually did one, and the person really liked it. It would a little creep me out a little bit. You know what I mean? But that's okay. But I think, you know, a half a butternut squash with a great vegetable curry. Something like that. Just don't just say, oh, you could have everything but the main course. Because then they feel bad. And that's wrong.
Yes. And there are some things that are a little bit meat-like, like the soy bacon that you mentioned earlier.
Soy bacon is great. Yeah. And you could do that. And, I mean, I think that's where you're, you know, and think about protein. You know, some beans. You know, a nice rice, bean, casserole. I don't know why, but when I think that, I kind of think Middle Eastern flavors. You know, and that all goes in, and that will work with your other sides, but you have a special entree. Or even like a polenta casserole is a great choice.
Oh,
you know, you can do individual ones. I mean, I think if you have vegetarians and they're actually your friends, you owe it to them to do something special for them. And don't make them suffer more than they already are.
You heard it here on KSFR.
I know, I've mellowed in my years. What could I say?
What are some of the biggest Thanksgiving Day cooking mistakes that people make?
First of all, they forget to buy their turkey. That's the first one. And then if they buy a bird, they buy it too late, or they buy it too big or too large. I mean, you have to be conscious of how many guests you have. I figure a pound of turkey per person will get you through the meal. A pound and a half of turkey per person will give you leftovers.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first thing you need to do. And the second thing you need to do is not make too much food. Because that's when people get that, oh, Thanksgiving, it'll never be over thing.
Right.
Think about how many people you're feeding and then get what you need. Another mistake people make, they go shopping on Wednesday. Wednesday is too late to go shopping.
It's a phenomenon in the stores.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And that's another reason people hate Thanksgiving, because they go to Whole Paycheck or Trader Joe's or wherever. You can't get in the door. They're out of half the things you need, and it becomes a nightmare, and there's no reason
Although
for it.
Although what's amazing is I went to Smith's, I think, two Thanksgivings ago on a Wednesday, doing exactly what you're not supposed to do, and they had enough brown sugar to sink the Titanic.
But they were out of cranberries.
Maybe.
Cranberries are another thing that people run out of in this town. I have had absolute cranberry nightmares, like at the last minute, because I had to make like 40 quarts of cranberry sauce, and I thought I had enough cranberries, and I had to go to every store in town to try and find more cranberries. So I think that's definitely a problem.
Okay, so Stacey Pearl says, do your shopping last weekend.
Yeah, Monday. Monday would be fine.
Right.
Of course, it's too late now,
it's
but
too late
that's
now.
When I would have done my shopping. The other thing is, I mean, I do it because I do cook all the time. If you're going to make something you've never made before, give it a trial run.
Ah, yes.
Because quite often you see a recipe on the internet, and it looks fantastic. And you make it, and at this altitude, it just doesn't work.
Especially for baked goods.
Absolutely. And it's not your fault. It's not like you've done it wrong. It's that things need to be altitude adjusted. So if you're going to try a new baked good or new recipe, try it the week before. Or have a friend of yours try it. Don't wait. Don't experiment on your friends on a very important evening when you're under all this stress that everything should be perfect.
Now, is turkey cooking subject to altitude, or is it more things like pies?
More like pies. Only the evaporation of the moisture. I think that's your only thing. Another thing that people do is they cut the turkey the second it comes out of the oven. Bad idea. Turkey, like meat, needs to sit about 20 minutes. All the juices then get absorbed into the bird. It will cut better, it will look more beautiful, and it will taste much better. So make sure you give yourself enough time to let the turkey rest before. And
as we established earlier, it's still cooking.
It is still cooking. It is still cooking. And you'll see it'll slice much more beautifully.
Let's talk for a moment about apple pie, which, of course, is very important. I make my apple pie
with bacon and brandy?
There's no bacon.
Okay.
But with a kind of brown sugar crumble crust that sometimes has walnuts or pecans in it. It took me about, 18 years to learn that you have to either steam your apples a little bit in advance or you have to use a kind of softer apple like Old
and
Delicious.
That is an exact altitude issue.
Yeah.
Whereas in other parts of the country, I would never consider baking with a Golden Delicious. Here, it's what I always use, and I do pre-cook my filling because or else your apples are going to be hard. The crust will be done, and the apples will be hard.
Right.
And remember, when you cook your apples, say you're using 8 apples in your pie and it's a gigantic bowl of apples, once you cook it down, it's going to lose a lot of volume. So make extra apples if you're going to cook it because nobody wants a skimpy little pie. You want a nice rounded top pie. And the other thing about apple pie, remember you could make your crusts ahead of time. You know, you could buy your crust if crust freaks you out, but I always make my crust. You can make them a week ahead of time, roll them out beautifully, put them in your freezer, then they're ready to go. Make it as easy. You know, planning ahead is really going to make the meal a lot more pleasant for you.
And that involves making lists, which aren't that hard to make, and it's kind of fun. I've also found that it's really nice to put some rum and brandy in the apples.
Mm-hmm.
Bourbon, if you're in a
pinch. Absolutely, why not?
It makes them so much better.
Mm-hmm. The other thing you have to remember is you can make that exact same apple pie with pears. It's pear pie is something not that many people make. It's absolutely delicious. Sometimes I do the exact recipe with pears, and then I'll take thin slices of orange and sit them all around the pears on top and then put the crust in. It gives this nice citrusy smell, and it's a wonderful surprise.
Wow.
And the pears this year have been really fantastic.
I had pear cider for the first time recently.
Oh, nice.
It is so good.
I love pears. I love pears. They're one of my favorites.
So when it's all done and you've got leftovers, then there's any number of things you can do with them.
Yes. First of all, do not waste the carcass. Cut all the meat off the carcass and make a pot of soup. Nothing tastes better than a good turkey soup made with a turkey carcass.
How long do you cook it?
I cook it a long time. I'll cook it 2-3 hours because it takes a while for the flavor to come out. And then I'll scrape off all the meat that's usable and then I'll throw the carcass away. And sometimes I'll use that as a base for another soup or I'll just make turkey soup with it. The second thing, it's always better to take all the meat off the bone. Do that. Because nobody wants to look at that tired old carcass in the refrigerator after 2 days. If you pull the meat off and put it in nice little bags, you could do everything from turkey sandwiches to turkey salad. I love turkey stroganoff. And it doesn't taste like your turkey dinner that you're having for the fourth time. You know, a nice cream sauce with some sherry, some buttered noodles. It's a new meal. It's a new day for the turkey. And I think that's, you know, if you have a family, that's going to make your kids eat it.
Stacey Pearl is executive chef with Walter Burke Catering. She's also the host of Mouth of Wonder.
Yes, I am.
Which is on
Saturdays at 10:30 to 11, and it's an honor to do that show. It's one of my favorite projects of all time. I've met so many wonderful people through that show, and I have all kinds of fun guests, and it's great. And I get lots of mail from folks, and people send me their recipes, and I just love it. It's a great way to communicate with the whole community.
That's fantastic. It's on here on KSFR on Saturday mornings, and they have a website, mouthofwonder.com.
Yes, and I have an enormous recipe archive, and all the recipes I've just discussed are on that recipe archive.
Excellent. Stacey Pearl, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you to you, too.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz.